Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Yes, welcome back into UAP. Stephen Diener back with you here on the Unidentified Alien Podcast, episode 80. Finally made it to number 80. It's about time. Today we're going to end our deep dive into Joe McMonagall and his remote viewing exploits during this part two episode. Really, I enjoy doing that first part, and I appreciate everybody who reached out to me after that. Quick shout out to everyone who messaged me and said, you know, how much they enjoyed that episode. I really appreciate that. You know, and I really do appreciate any feedback. Obviously, I enjoy reading the positive feedback more, but I appreciate any feedback. But I'm really happy that everything that I received from you was positive. So I'm glad that one worked out and you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I think you're going to like this one too. But just to recap, when it comes to that part one episode, it was certainly a handful, and we learned a lot about Joe's history in Vietnam, his near-death experience, and how he became the most successful and prolific remote viewer in U.S. intelligence history, at least that we know of. All that on top of our first two stories, where he spoke of, you know, light beings manipulating him physically and mentally with some type of cube-shaped space, and how he was able to give specific details relating to pre-ancient civilization on Mars, well, 1 million years ago. So, yeah, if you haven't heard part one, you may want to go back and do that at some point, you know, at your leisure. But that was just a little recap there of some of the things we spoke about during that first episode. But it is time to move on now as we shift gears to our final stories covering the incredible Joe McMonagall. But before we get into this latest slew of unbelievable details, we, of course, have to hit our factoid first. Come on now.
Ladies and gentlemen, the factoid.
Yes, and guess what? We're about to get sucked into a black hole. Okay, maybe not really, but scientists have discovered that we have a new black hole neighbor. And it's a lot closer to Earth than we've ever previously discovered. So this black hole, which is classified as a massive stellar black hole, to be exact, has been discovered within our Milky Way galaxy. So how big is it, you ask? Well, according to those who discovered it, it is 33 times larger than our sun. Well, I guess the other question is, how close is it to us? Well, in space terms, it's not that far at all. It's only, I say only, again in space terms, 2,000 light years away. So for perspective, there are certain star clusters and nebula that lie within this range that can actually be viewed using a powerful telescope. So I wonder if they can see, I guess, this new black hole. So this newly discovered black hole is now the largest known and closest sucker within our galaxy. No worries, though. I'm sure we'll be fine. You may know I haven't looked outside lately and seen us getting sucked up. So far, so good. But I heard that, I'm like, wow, that is pretty crazy. It just kind of goes to show you, we only know a fraction of what, not of what's only in the universe, but what's within our own galaxy. But now let's go ahead and dig back into Joseph McMonagall and another secret project that he worked on. This one actually took place 2 years before his famous Mars reading that we covered in part one. This began on August 10th, 1982, and it's referred to as Project 8,200.
My raw impressions are that each one of these target sites is like a different spoke in a wheel. It's like a different part of a jigsaw puzzle. And each one is dormant. It does nothing unless it's commanded to do something. Mm-hmm. And then all it does is transfer, or it just transfers something.
Well, you should know that voice by now as he refers to these pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. That was, of course, Joe McMonagle, and he was talking about what he was seeing during his time in Project 8200. Now, to start and give more context there, it began on the date I previously mentioned, August 10th, 1982, and it lasted for 4 years as a collaborative effort between the Army and the CIA. So its purpose was to use remote viewing to corroborate information that was gained from a previous remote viewer named Pat Price. Now, Price was an astonishing talent in his own right, actually. A former CIA director named Stansfield Turner was even quoted once as saying that Pat Price could see what was going on anywhere in the world through his psychic powers. Fascinating stuff, of course, but if he was that good, why did they feel the need to bring in Joe to corroborate the information that Pat gave in previous sessions? Well, maybe it had to do with the type of information that was given. Information, if found out to be true, would be so explosive and possibly paradigm-shifting in our own human history on this planet, it could change the views of the populace that has us sitting at the top of the proverbial food chain. But what kind of info could produce such a dramatic effect? Perhaps it had to do with his claim that he viewed alien-owned and operated underground bases around the globe. Take a listen to what Pat Price originally said, even before Joe started looking into it.
Price's personal sessions led him to believe this. At least four mountains across Earth hide secret underground bases, managed by beings he believed were extraterrestrial. In 1973, 2 years before his death, Price gave Hal Puthoff at the DIA-funded SRI International a file, only saying, "You might be interested in these UFO bases."
Yeah, I would say that would be very interesting. And thanks to the YouTube channel, it's redacted for that, by the way, so good on them. But that's, man, imagine getting a letter like that. You might find this interesting that, I see four alien bases around the globe. Can you tell me more, please? So he gave this info in 1973, and Price also claimed that he viewed alien craft that actually sat at one of the bases, and he says that it could generate its own electromagnetic field. Very interesting there. So what is the deal with the four bases in general? That's exactly what the intel agencies wanted to find out. And that curiosity led to the birth of Project 8200. But it took a while for them to actually tackle this possibility and to really dig into this conversation themselves. They sat on this info from 1973 until 1980, when it was finally given to the head of Project Stargate, Joel's old buddy Skip Atwater. Of course, we remember Project Stargate and Skip Atwater from part one of this series during episode 79. And now that Skip had this info in his possession, he put all the necessary pieces together, you know, all the bureaucracy and red tape you have to work through in the government and all these intelligence agencies. So got it all together, and a couple of years later, Project 82 was officially born to investigate these claims. Which brings us back to where we began this story, with Joe giving his reading on these four bases and finding out what they were used for. Here's a little bit more on that.
I get an overwhelming feeling of the big 3C, you know, command, control, and communications.
All right, so we look at the three big C's. So when you talk about command, control, and communication, you're going to hear a lot about those, I think, as we go on. And that's what makes this, or one of the reasons what makes this so intriguing as far as who's using these bases, you know, what they're being used for. But as you heard there, he says command, control, and communication. Why is this even a mission, though? What do they want to find out about us and gather intel on? I mean, if this is some type of extraterrestrial operation, what are they doing with those big C's? What is the purpose of gathering those three big C's and you know, having that command center or the control center and communicating? Is it keeping tabs on our evolution? just society in general, as far as maybe being some type of watchers? Are they communicating about our capabilities in weapons and space travel? It's hard to say, but I think the best plan of action is to go on and continue to hear what Joe said, because hopefully we'll be able to find some answers to those questions. So adding on to all that, at one point during his investigation, Joe said he felt that the four bases were kind of like part of a larger cobweb system of operations. Here's more on that.
If you equate this to a cobweb, every single angle in a cobweb represents a location on the cobweb. And I get an impression that the spider has not turned his whole cobweb on yet.
Okay, that's kind of ominous. So who or what are the spider? You know, where does that analogy lead to? Are we talking about technology being the spider or whoever is controlling the technology? And what are they waiting for? Now, remember, this happened back in the early 80s, what we're hearing right now. So do the math. I mean, it's 2024. We're talking 40 years in between, 40 plus years, if you go back to 1982, where Joe is talking about these things. So have we seen these installations? Have we seen the, you know, spider activate the cobweb and we just haven't known it? It's kind of weird to think about. You know, what is the full potential of these capabilities of these bases? And what has taken place since this discovery? I can't help but to get that question out of my mind. But of course, another major question concerning these bases centered around their locations, right? We heard Pat Price say there's four of them. Joe is talking about this cobweb. So in the original reading with Pat Price, he stated that the four bases all sat under various mountains, which is particularly striking to me, considering all the stories we've heard about, you know, with otherworldly beings using mountain ranges as a possible cover, even here within the United States. I mean, we've heard about the Dulce base. I've mentioned that a million times during the episodes here on UAP. You talk about Skinwalker Ranch and the mountain ranges out there and things like that. So that assertion is not limited just to aliens, though. The same has been said about man-made bases dwelling inside of mountains, right? I mean, we know about some of those. But in the case of these four locations, man-made doesn't seem to be part of the equation, at least so far. So let's take a look at these things. According to Price, the locations were listed as the following. Okay, these are the locations that he gave to the investigators, to the CIA and the intelligence agencies. Number one, Mount Hayes in Alaska, located in the southeastern region of Fairbanks, which, by the way, that one may not come as a shock to some. Many theories about that area have been given over the years. Number two location in Mount Zeal in the Northern Territory of Australia. Number three was found to be in Mount Inyangani in Zimbabwe. And four, Mount Perdido in Spain. So all these locations were viewed and corroborated by McMonagle. So just get that part out of the way first real quick. He, you know, viewed all these locations and his descriptions, their existence that Pat Price talked about matched what Joe McMonagle was talking about. So let's just get that part out of the way, you know, right off the bat. But let's go ahead and dig into the first one. We'll go one by one on these and what Joe was saying during his readings and the information he was finding out and try to put it all together here in the end. Here's what Joe had to say when he was looking into the Mount Hayes location in Alaska.
It's defensive, not offensive, like a shield of some kind. Very high charged, very excited, coherent pulses of positive charged particles. Never been used on a full output. Still, like, still are experimental. The power is weird. It's like, I don't think it's ever been done.
All right, it's never been done. You know, it's experimental. So there was a couple things as far as, I know it might have been a little bit hard to understand, so I want to point that out. In some cases, it's going to sound like Joe is sleep talking, because during this reading or these readings over time, Apparently, according to the details, he had to go into like this deep meditative trance to be able to see what he was trying to see. So if it kind of sounds like he's sleepy or sleep talking, that's why. But just to point out a couple of things that he said there, because it's so fascinating, obviously. So kind of like a defensive installation. He says it's kind of like a shield. It's not offensive. It's not there to, you know, counterattack somebody, but maybe to provide defense of some kind. You said power that hasn't been used. So it's like waiting to be turned on. Again, my question is, used by who? You know, is that a them or us type of situation? Because, you know, if this thing exists, like Joe and Pat Price have both talked about, then it's just sitting there within Mount Hayes in Alaska. And it has this incredible power, experimental, as, you know, Joe put it there, with pulses of positive charged particles. And I wonder this, and this, I could be way off base here, but it's just something that pops into my head. Is this like the type of, you know, neutrino particles that Eric Hecker spoke about? Remember Eric Hecker from the Disclosure Conference? He made a big splash there last June, I believe it was, right? June in 2023, where he spoke about, you know, working in Antarctica and seeing these positively charged, you know, neutrinos that were being used for all these different experiments and possible direct energy weapon application. So I just can't help but to wonder if some of that kind of relates to what, you know, Joe is talking about here from 40 years ago, and who knows how long that base has been there with inside of Mount Hayes with this, you know, defensive technology. So I don't know. I mean, it makes me wonder, is this some type of precursor to direct energy weapons? Did we reverse engineer some of this stuff? Just questions that pop into my own head. So McMonagle went on to also say that the Hayes location used some type of long-range, low-frequency communications. So get this. According to some reports, these low-frequency communications actually did damage to some airplanes that would fly over the area. Now, here's the thing, and this is what really got me when I looked into it. This would actually make a lot of sense, considering that Mount Hayes lies within the Alaskan Triangle area, where many planes have been reported missing over the years. I actually did an episode on the Alaskan Triangle, I think it was 60-something, and talked about all of these different, you know, occurrences where these flights and people go missing. So could these subterranean communications within Mount Hayes be causing planes to crash in the area, leaving the inhabitants never to be seen or heard from again? Now, I know that's a scary thought, but when you start to kind of connect the dots a little bit, it might make sense. I don't know. Now, I know we talked about, you know, a lot of the stuff hasn't been turned on as far as defense, but that doesn't mean the communication portions haven't been used. Also interesting to consider within this same area is the famous case of the Japan Airlines UFO sighting. If you remember this, again, I'm not trying to, you know, plug my old episodes, but if you want to hear about them, obviously, of course, I put out the greatest hits and there's some good ones out there. But in one of the older episodes, I spoke about the Japan Airlines UFO sighting that took place right over this area back in 1986. It was flight 1628. It was a Japanese cargo plane. And in fact, the pilot got fired for reporting his sighting. So just, again, when you start to connect the dots, and even for me, it kind of blows my mind, because I can go back to a story I covered 2 years ago with the Japanese airline right there in this sighting, and then a story I did last year when it comes to the Alaskan Triangle, and they all kind of come together over one singular area with Mount Hayes with this possible discovery of, you know, this subterranean base using this some type of low-frequency, long-range communication. I know I blow my own mind sometimes, but remember when I said that Pat Price mentioned seeing a craft that could generate its own electromagnetic field? He spoke about that during his initial remote viewing session. Well, funny enough, according to Price, that craft lied within Mount Hayes. That's the one that he saw, was within Mount Hayes. So if you start to put some of these things together, you consider that, you know, we may or may not have some connections here. It makes me wonder if that's what the pilot saw from the Japanese cargo plane. Did he see that UFO, that craft that Pat Price was talking about? Fascinating stuff. But obviously it does not end there, not even close, because that was just the first location. Because next up for McMonagall was base number 2 under Mount Zeal in Australia.
Sense feeling of control, protection, and waiting. Very little activity, very few people. It's caretaker type. Keep flashing the protective umbrella. It's like an instantaneous umbrella. Small nuclear power device. The feeling for caretaker. National, something national force.
Okay, so this one is kind of like extra weird in my eyes. There was a lot there. First off, what is he talking about with a national force? So, because national force, so are we talking about human involvement? Or are we talking about some type of, Australian military? Is this U.S. military in Australia? Or when he says national, is he relating that to, nation of extraterrestrials? And that's just how he's putting it during his session. And again, we're talking about a defensive structure here. He's talking about like this instantaneous protective umbrella that can be used on this base, which to me sounds like a force field. I mean, that's the first thing I think of is like, a dome, a bubble that protects this base, whatever that instantaneous protective umbrella would be that he's seen. And is that coming from the nuclear power device? So apparently whatever this base is, according to Joe, he's talking about some type of nuclear power device within that could be the source of power, you would think, for this base as a whole. And who's the waiting caretaker? So someone's there, but they're alone? It feels like to me so far that these bases have been there, when you talk about Mount Zeal, when you talk about Mount Hayes, for a very long time. And I don't know why that would be, but again, here we are. There's more intrigue here as McMonagall continues. Could we be looking at a joint base between aliens and humans like I was talking about? I don't know. You might think that a little bit more when you hear him talk about this.
That I get all this overlay of command and control centers, like defensive command control centers. Like we're talking concept, because this is all waiting.
Again, we talk about waiting for what, or waiting for who? Is this a doomsday shelter, or is this made just in case, in case of emergency, break glass and use these bases? And again, if that's the case, then who made them? And that's, I guess, the question that we keep coming back to, because if these have been there for a long time, how could humans have made these things with, these instantaneous protective umbrellas that Joe is talking about, or having these electromagnetic craft within Mount Hayes? Waiting. He just talks about waiting, and I keep asking, waiting for what? What are they going to use it for? Defense center, he keeps saying, and it's almost like a concept, like a conceptual, layout of a command and control center. This is what's going on under Mount Zeal in Australia. And has it been used in the past 40 years since Joe was talking about it? Well, something else interesting here with this base, another remote viewer who was put on the task of viewing this base said that it actually reminded him of the way NORAD operates within the Cheyenne Mountain. So this one seems maybe some type of human cooperation, because you're talking about command and control centers. And also the viewer said that he could see a dark, shadowy figure sitting at a big keyboard. He described him as emotionless and stoic, even. Outside of that, McMonagall gave a similar reaction, as he went on to say that those command centers he saw actually reminded him of central command centers that he had been in himself in his military career, or, within his intelligence career. So let's just say, I'll play devil's advocate here, okay? Was Joe mixing up a memory of some place that he had been in the past and taking it as remote viewing? Or was it something more sinister going on? Funny enough, he actually uses that word here as he finishes describing this mountain base in Australia.
I have a very sinister feeling for this target. And it's not threatening now, but it's sort of like putting a snake in a box. You know he's in the box, but he's not threatening you. That kind of a feeling.
And this one kind of makes me uneasy, too, because if there is human involvement in this, like, you know, maybe the base was there and there was some type of cooperation that happened with extraterrestrials. Maybe that's the case. I don't know. But if it is, they're working together at this base, you know, and the humans kind of build their own central command within here and mix it all together, kind of like a Dulce base situation in New Mexico. That was a million and one that I've mentioned it in the past few years. You can tell that I find Dulce base very intriguing. Maybe that's the case. And if it is, maybe that's why Joe says he gets a sinister feeling from it, because maybe they're up to no good. But just unbelievable when you think about the, you know, repercussions of this. Is it a human or is it an alien agenda or both, as far as working together or one working against the other? Pictures from these sessions actually show an entrance that is built into a deep canyon cave system, as they described it. And it has a river at the end of a lake. So maybe that could be a clue if you know the area in the Northern Territories of Australia. Man, what is this place? Well, our next location of interest in Perdido, Spain, may give us some clues to some of those questions. It's here that Joe discovers possible human involvement in at least this instance. It's a little hard to understand, again, because he's in that deep trance. Again, almost kind of sounds like sleep talking. So got to listen real closely to some of this. But take a listen here to Joe talking about the underground base in Perdido, Spain.
Constructed elsewhere and flown in. See it being in place by a handful of people. Helicopters. It's a very rugged mountain range. It's helicopters. Not large, but small. Boxes being brought in by helicopters.
So the gist of it there, not large, but small as far as the supply, the boxes being brought in, and the helicopters. Now, obviously, if there's helicopters flying over this place or to this place in Spain, you would think that's not an alien operation of, you know, extraterrestrials flying helicopters. They have their own craft. I don't think they'd be using helicopters. So what is happening here? They're making supply drops to this base within the mountain there, or mountain range anyway, in Perdido, Spain. And it's important to note the geography of the location. If you couldn't understand Joe there, as a desolate, rugged mountain range, as he put it, which makes it, you know, of course, like a prime location for any type of clandestine activity from humans, non-humans alike, right? Which is why we always talk about places in Antarctica being a possibility of, you know, alien activity or bases. Also interesting to note is that Skip Atwater actually went to this location. He tracked it down based off of Joe's description of the area and found it, because there was a different clip where Joe mentions seeing sheep in a field. And sure enough, when Skip Atwater went over there about 20 plus years later after this reading took place, I think he actually went there in 2009, according to some of the reports it was seen, he found a field with sheep in it. Even all that time later, so the sheep are hanging out there for a while. And so he went to go check out this area and took a picture of the mountain range. And wouldn't you know it, in the picture showed up a UFO flying over the mountain. I cannot make this stuff up. It's really incredible. So now that Joe has gotten through the first three underground bases, and I still have a lot of questions there in Perdido, and, you know, does that connect to, you know, everywhere else in Australia that we were talking about, and to the one in Alaska? Let's find out, because we were going to go to our last location. One more missing jigsaw puzzle piece, if you will, before we put it all together. And Joe does just that when he views Mount Inyangani in Zimbabwe. Here he is.
All black boxes, electronics, power pack, all suitcase size, sealed. Very advanced.
like I've never seen before. Complex. Get a feeling of sensing and receiving and emitting relay and concept of control, command and control.
So again, with command and control, you know, we heard that during his reading of Mount Zeal, Mount Hayes, and emitting information and having this very advanced electronic operation, maybe even complex, mentions, you know, more like black boxes and things like that. So there are some striking similarities between these four bases with Hayes and Zeal and with Perdido and now in Zimbabwe with Inyangani. There was another piece to the puzzle, though, that he mentioned there. He said the word relay. Now, relating to what exactly, right? I mean, I don't know if you picked up on that, but that was something that caught my attention. Relaying to what? Relaying where? I mean, you know, what are you relaying? What type of information are they gathering? Well, Joe continues here on that very subject.
Get a fixed orbital platform. It's not going anywhere.
Fixed orbital platform. Okay, so we're talking about something in space, in orbit around the Earth, right? I mean, so this base is sending and receiving info from a second party in space? Like there's some type of home base? So we have these bases in these four mountains that we're talking about around the world, in Spain, Australia, Alaska, and Zimbabwe, okay? You're talking four different continents, right? You have Africa, you have Australia, you have North America with Alaska, and you have Europe with Spain. So you have all these four corners, if you will. And in this situation, in Zimbabwe, you have this information being relayed to a fixed platform in space. Like this is, it's, it kind of leaves me speechless, obviously, as you can see, since I can't think of a word to describe it. It's really just incredible, unreal, unbelievable. But here's the thing, you know, and they're using these subterranean bases to send out information. Again, my big question is, what type of information is being sent out? Like, what is so important that needs to be sent out to some type of home platform fixed in orbit around the Earth? And how far away is it? Yes, we're going to get to that. Amazingly, Joe goes on to say that this base is not occupied, okay, we're talking about the one in Zimbabwe, by anyone. And that the whole operation is actually fully automated. That's what he saw while looking into this base in Zimbabwe at the time of his reading. He did also say that it could receive occupants, and it had the capability to do so, but no one was there at the time he was seeing it. So no one was home, I guess, essentially. And he said that they do have advanced automatic relay station. Again, I beg the question, what information is being exchanged? Is there an extraterrestrial operation? Is it a human one? Again, is it both? Is there a conjunction here, a cooperation of sending information out to this fixed orbital platform? It's unbelievable. So let's get back to that question again, this fixed orbital platform, because Joe did have more to say about this. Listen to this.
This space-borne platform is in a permanent fixed place. It's not rotating around the Earth, and it's not moving north and south or doing any orthotagonal rotation or anything. It's fixed. It's just like it's nailed in space, and as the Earth rotates, it rotates with the Earth. It's like it's fastened with a string to the Earth, never moves, and it's way out there, you know, so it has no decaying orbit. It's fixed.
It's just so incredibly fascinating. Way out there, fixed to Earth. I mean, this must be extraterrestrial in nature, right? I mean, how else can you explain something like this unless we just have so, just, you know, advanced technology beyond our comprehension, or not, maybe the comprehension is the right word, but beyond our expectations, right? I mean, you know, we've talked about before, like, craft that we see in the air may be some type of, you know, human-made craft, some type of secret operations from Skunk Works and things like that. You know, the TR-3B could be an explanation to the triangle craft that we see in different places. But if we're talking about some type of fixed space platform, is that human? I can't say enough of how truly fascinating, as well as slightly unnerving, maybe is the right way to put it, this whole idea is. And also makes more sense now as to why the CIA and the Army wanted to know more about these places, right? I mean, kind of getting back to the genesis of the conversation of employing, Joe to kind of look into Pat Price's claims, because they're thinking, well, this seems pretty unbelievable, so we might want to make sure on this type of stuff. If you have someone who isn't human, a race that isn't human, sending and receiving information to a fixed platform in space, and it's fixed to Earth. But also a question on that is, does that go undetected? Like, how is that undetected? I mean, I have to ask that question when it comes to astronomers, when it comes to NASA, or is it undetected? Maybe they know and they don't say anything. These are all possibilities. Joe also gave some pretty interesting info while he was, traveling to this fixed platform, maybe is the way to put it. Now, I'm not going to lie, it sounds like he's traveling through deep space at this point with how he describes this, so go ahead and listen.
Get what looks like a reddish yellow ball, black spots. I understand that. Or far away feeling. Don't feel like I can go on a straight line there. Like I'm folded over.
All right, so again, he's in that trance, so a little bit hard to understand, but he's talking about not moving in a straight line, feels like he's folding over, which strikes me, is he describing going through a wormhole of some sort? You know, how like Einstein described of folding space-time, and, you know, like when you fold the piece of paper and put the pencil through it instead of drawing a straight line over it. Is this the type of thing he's talking about? Some type of, you know, intergalactic travel that is beyond our understanding or anything that we have, at least that we know of? And he's talking about this reddish yellow ball with black spots. I gotta tell you, that sounds like the sun. I don't know if that struck you that way, but it did for me, or at least a sun. You know, if he's talking about going out through space and seeing where this orbital fixed platform is. Unreal. But oddly enough, Joe also mentions how he had kind of like a tough time trying to nail down the time aspect of things while viewing this platform. He said it felt ancient and new all at once, which is weird. You know, is this like a time isn't linear type of thing when it comes to this platform? But it was very far away, as you put it. How strange is this? I mean, we're talking about some type of advanced communication system here on Earth that can communicate with some type of deep space object and whoever's on that object, at least according to what Joe McMonagle described. But he also says this about this operation in Zimbabwe, communicating with this deep space platform. Take a listen.
This target has convinced me that this has no, absolutely no evil content in the way that we would describe evil, you know, like guiding nuclear weapons or blasting space platforms out of space or any of that stuff. There's just no sinister attitude to this.
Well, that's good news, at least. That's encouraging. You know, that's how he reads it. That was his read. No sinister attitude toward this. Maybe research purposes, but again, what are they researching? Or, you know, who is researching what? Like I was asking earlier in the episode, you know, is this human behavior, societal stuff, maybe just, you know, Earth behavior? You know, how is the environment reacting over time? Keeping an eye on things as far as, you know, any type of changes in environment or climate? I don't know. These are all valid questions, I think, anyway. But one more important note here, maybe the most important, because it kind of brings it all together, I think. Joe's final assertion to this whole thing was that it was a relay system, and not just a relay system in Zimbabwe. I think that part is obvious, but a system of interconnected webs to the other bases. These were not, and maybe still are not, independent installations. They are connected to each other, intertwined even. I guess creating that, you know, cobweb, that spider web that Joe saw in the beginning of his session when we started this off. Kind of all comes together there. Oh, and by the way, there could be more than just these four we have mentioned. Are you surprised? Yeah, Joe says there's more.
Also, there's more than just these four locations. I have an immediate vision of seabed locations. You know, I honestly believe that there are seabed locations of these things.
You had to see that coming, right? I mean, come on, we couldn't just stop at four. Now, that's the only ones we're talking about as we, you know, begin to wrap up here, but seabed locations, I mean, that makes perfect sense. We've talked many times about, you know, unidentified submerged objects, USOs. I'm not sure. I know everything has a different name these days, but that's the term I still use is, you know, USOs for those. And we've talked about that many times, you know, off of Catalina. You know, there's reports of underwater bases over there, you know, in California off the coast and in different spots throughout the world. So should we be shocked that he's also seen seabed locations? I'd love to hear more about that as well. And this is something, I don't know about you, but it's not going to leave my thoughts anytime soon. So definitely going to continue to investigate these things as well as trying to get Joel himself on the show. I am going to work on that now that we've been able to cover, you know, a lot of his story and some of the things that he's seen over the years. But all in all, what do we have here, right? Pat Price was able to describe the beings he saw working in the Alaska base. He actually described them as being thin and kind of like robotic-like, concentrated on a mission is how he put it. He said they resembled Homo sapiens, but their heart, lungs, blood, and eyes were different. Aside from those minor details, they were just like us. I mean, come on. All kidding aside here, though, as, you know, kind of looking at some type of ancient alien bases, I mean, is that what this is? Does it surmise to that one truth, and it's controlled and operated by extraterrestrials for their purposes alone, or is there something else going on here involving humans? Again, I keep asking that question because I think it deserves to be asked. How else do we explain the central command-looking rooms and the helicopters making supply drops in Spain? Maybe the answer is a little bit of each. Maybe that's the best way to kind of, you know, wrap it up. If I could recall something from the very beginning, I'd like to replay this clip because I think it might make a lot more sense to us now that we've heard the whole thing.
My raw impressions are that each one of these target sites is like a different spoke in a wheel. It's like a different part of a jigsaw puzzle. And each one is dormant. It does nothing unless it's commanded to do something. Mm-hmm. And then all it does is transfer, or it just transfers something.
Really is quite thought-provoking and really, again, like a mind-bending mystery, if you ask me. And I wish I had all the answers. But hey, that's what it's all about, right? Asking the questions, looking for answers. That's what we do here on UAP. Now, as we wrap up this two-part series, I find it more than worthy to mention the fact that there were many more remote viewers like Joe who were successful to a certain degree during their missions. This was and still is the real deal. Real programs, real documents, and quite frankly, real results. The U.S. and Russian intelligence agencies have been employing it for decades, so why would they do that if it wasn't effective? So maybe this is more of an existential question, but should this two-part series tell us about ourselves, not just Joe McMonagle? Joe was just a normal guy fighting in the Vietnam War before he gained these abilities through a near-death experience. And that's not to say that we have to, you know, go and die to tap into these abilities. Remember, it was Edgar Casey himself who said, we all have this ability. We just have to focus on unlocking it. And in our busy day-to-day lives where we're all worried about how we're getting to work and getting stuck in traffic and how we're paying the bills and getting the kids to school and camps and practices and all these different things and how we're going to pay for next week's grocery bill, it's hard to do that. It's hard to focus on something like this, let alone anything else that occupies our mind in the busy day-to-day. Maybe believing that this is the real deal is the first step in all that. I don't know. But I'd like to end the show today with this last clip. And it comes from an episode of a talk show in England. It was hosted by a man named Paul McKenna. It's an older clip. I think it was from like the early 90s, late 80s. It's hard to tell for sure, and I couldn't find the date on it. But I think what Joe says here is kind of like a nice encapsulation for this longer-ranging discussion that we've had over these past two parts surrounding the phenomena of remote viewing.
You go and remote view something that somebody's seeing miles away, but I'm told that you can actually remote view something before they've decided where the location is?
Actually, you can. It doesn't matter. Time is immaterial to when you do the remote viewing or when the person's at the location.
So what you're doing is outside of time, then?
Outside of time, space, exactly.
Outside of time and space. Time is immaterial. How about that, right? All the possibilities. Just so damn fascinating with all this. But that will do it for now. I did mention a surprise guest for anybody who follows me and the show on Twitter, at UAPodcast850. I'll mention that again before I sign off for today. But I mentioned a couple weeks ago a surprise guest coming your way to kind of wrap up some of these discussions. And that will be coming out on Monday for UAP Weekly. So listen for that. I'll let you in on some of those details after the weekend on who to expect there. I think you'll enjoy it. It's somebody who doesn't do a lot of appearances, but looking forward to speaking with him and looking forward to hearing it on Monday on the new edition of UAP Weekly at that point. And of course, episode 81 will be out later next week as well, so I'll keep you up to date on that. But that is going to be it for this edition, for this two-part series surrounding the incredible life and career and everything that Joe McMonagle has seen and has gone through. And what a time it's been. I have thoroughly enjoyed putting these together. It's been eye-opening for me personally. And, well, it's just honestly created some more questions in some other areas. But, man, it's just absolutely fascinating. So I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have, because it really is an eye-opener in some cases. But, of course, don't forget to download and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. As always, it's everywhere. It's, you know, Spotify and Amazon and Apple, all those good places. And you can follow the show, like I said, on Twitter if you aren't already, at UAPodcast850. I post all the updates on everything there. A little bit more active these days, so if you want to follow along there, it's at UAPodcast850 on Twitter and a lot of the other social media, TikTok, YouTube, trying to get more stuff out there as well, always, you know, it's always trying to do my best. So if you follow along there as well, you can reach out to me and keep up with all the latest information that I'm putting out. Also, if you don't reach out on social media, but you want to email me instead, you can do that, sdeaneruap@gmail.com. I always appreciate all your messages. Again, the feedback, your messages, I always try to get back to everybody, no matter what platform it's on. So at sdeaneruap@gmail.com, sdeaneruap@gmail.com. And of course, uappodcast.com. Check that out for everything having to do with the show. But on that note, thank you all again for everything. Your support always means the world to me. It truly, truly does. So thank you so much. And until next time, be well. I'll talk to you again soon. It's Stephen Diener here on UAP, the Unidentified Alien Podcast. Talk to you soon. Thanks.